Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Okay, so last night, there were a lot of different ways you could consume the draft. ABC had their feed. ESPN had a feed. You could watch it on the NFL Network. There was a Pat McAfee sort of Manning cast.
Oh, that's right, with Belichick.
With Belichick. There were a lot of ways, including C.J. Stroud. Who's
that?
C.J. Stroud is the quarterback of the Houston Texans.
Oh, that C.J. Stroud.
That C.J. Stroud, okay. Not the other C.J. Stroud. So C.J. Stroud and Micah Parsons were guest analysts with Adam Lefko in the Bleacher Report app. And on BleacherReport.com, they streamed sort of a kind of a Manning cast.
Which I didn't find out about until I got a notification. Apparently I signed up for notifications for Bleacher Report somewhere along the way.
Yeah.
So right before I got to your place.
Okay.
I saw that C.J. Stroud. Oh, that Stephon Diggs was joining C.J. Stroud on that on that broadcast. And C.J., probably isn't a surprise to most people. I don't think this is like homerism or a bias on my part. Was way more prepared for the draft than almost any current athlete would be in jumping on with the draft.
100%.
Usually guys just watch some highlights or what have you.
Papers in front of
him. CJ had notes. He was consulting stuff. He was on his phone, but you could tell it wasn't because he was texting somebody. Like he was dialed in. It was really cool to see.
Football junkie.
He's
man.
A football nerd. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. My little test of like whether I'd want a guy to date my sister or not. You know, and that's why like Will Anderson and D'Amico Ryans are way high up on the list. I'd be cool with them dating my sister. CJ, there's an asterisk. I don't know if he checks every box for who you would want to date your sister, except that I think he might be too obsessed with his job.
Yeah.
Which is perfect, because what do I want out of my quarterback?
Irrational obsession.
Yes.
Yes.
I don't want them to have good perspective on life.
Right.
If anything,
CJ's on his way.
Personal life in turmoil, if possible, because he's so hyper-focused on success.
Super hyper-focused. So take a listen to this. This is CJ reacting to the 31st overall pick, which was Ricky Pearsall, the receiver out of Florida, who he probably projects as a slot receiver, but he's super dynamic.
And especially that part there. I think CJ, they didn't use the word slot receiver, but CJ was kind of pushing back from the notion that he couldn't beat press coverage.
And he mixes Tank Dell's name into this. Take a listen. This is CJ reacting. And before we play the audio, know that when the pick gets announced, CJ, who had basically just been sitting there all night on the couch, kind of focused, like sitting there watching, notes on his lap. Ricky Pearsall gets picked, and if you're watching on YouTube, CJ does this thing where he's like, he throws his body backwards, buries his head in the couch, like he was visibly
upset. That was the guy he wanted.
Visibly upset.
Except this isn't like some fantasy draft or something. Like this is he wanted him for the Texans.
He wanted this guy as part of the Texans receiving corps. Here is CJ Stroud. Take a listen to this, and I think maybe what do we read into this as to what the Texans might be thinking
heading
into night two here?
For the San Francisco 49ers with the 31st pick, the Niners select. Wow. Your guy.
Well, we probably was going to get a receiver, but hey, shout out to Pearson.
That was the first reaction I've seen.
Okay, hit pause, Ben, real quick. Just hit pause. If you heard him there, he goes, well, we're probably going to get a receiver.
Right.
Kind of muttered it a little bit. But in case people didn't hear him say that, I just want to make sure they heard that. Continue.
Damn. I wasn't even on their radar. Right. I'm happy for him, though, because he wanted to go in the first round and get some more money. I talked to him a couple times, man. Congrats, bro. That's big time. Bro, he's elite. You'll see.
He gets
especially
open.
Especially in that offense, man. Kyle's going to dial it up for him.
Kyle,
that's why I feel like he was going to fit in our system.
4.41 with a 1.49 10-yard split.
Oh, he's nasty, bro.
Well, if you give him a free release, he gets open.
I don't care if you press him. You put on the Missouri game, they press man a lot, bro. It's just that Tank has it, like that. Just that little quick, little hezzy. Like I'm not saying like I'm some guru or some receiver like goat that just, but I know routes when I see him. I know football players.
Well, you've played with like five Pro Bowl wide receivers at this.
Exactly. Point. So like when I watched him, like at first I was like, okay, yeah, he's good because I seen him at Arizona State, and then his first year at Florida was okay, but this last year, bro, he put it together. Hmm. And bro, when I tell you, I don't know what it's like Tank. Like you can't just put one. Like it's everything combined. Hmm. Like I just text my boy, one of my best friends. He's always with me, and I told him like, dang, they got Pearsall. I wanted him bad, especially before we didn't know we were gonna get Steph. Pearsall was my guy. Like, that's the one I wanted. So that's a big time get.
Okay,
so he identified Pearsall going back several weeks at least before they got Stephon Diggs.
Talked to him. He said right. In that cut, he's been in touch with him. Those are the two things, two of the things that jumped out at me of many things in that clip right there. And we'll talk about what this might mean for the Texans in a second. But CJ had already communicated with him, mm-hmm. which makes me wonder, like what other receivers has he communicated with? And how cool would that be if you're a collegiate receiver and CJ Stroud's reaching out to you? Maybe they had a relationship before that. The other thing, too, is when CJ's like, it's like in the Missouri game where he ... And I'm like, CJ Stroud on Saturdays is sitting down and watching Missouri and Florida. It's like back when he was at Arizona State. And then he had a pretty good first year at Florida. And then this dude, like CJ, I think like if CJ decided today, like, yeah, you know what? This playing football thing's not for me. I'm going to be an analyst. I'm like, he would be a damn good analyst.
Right, right. Like, yeah, I think he would, yeah.
He watches a ton of college football.
The biggest thing, though, too, is that I guess maybe I'm guilty of verbal analysis like some people are guilty of body analysis or body language analysis and everything. But I do think that it's naturally hardwired into him to be humble about things, to have a certain humility about things. Like even him just saying right there, like, hey, look, I'm not acting
like I'm a guru or something.
Like that's the kind of thing that actually keeps you hungry and thirsty for more knowledge, as opposed to the people that are damn certain of exactly how right they are all the time.
Yep.
You know, like a little bit of humility in your opinion goes a long way. And especially like as a quarterback, like the guys who stay curious their entire careers tend to do really well.
Yeah.
And that's him. But yeah, the fact that, then he said, we're probably going to take a quarterback anyway,
or
a wide receiver anyway. That's where you just wonder, okay, how much teams might talk to the quarterback. A lot of teams like to get their quarterback's opinion, especially if they've watched film. I know the Bills have talked about this with Josh Allen just recently, but like I don't think many teams would be open with exactly what they're thinking because they have to worry like everybody else does about just anybody knowing too much,
especially
you know?
The Texans you know, like yeah. who keep everything under lock,
right? Right. Yeah, like I think that in that organization there are a lot of things that only Nick and D'Amico know.
Yes,
like when they pull everything together, they're not sharing that with anybody else. That's how they were able to keep everything so secret last year. So I guess if we got to, let's say the Texans stayed at 42,
yeah,
and D'Amico says, hey, we're going to take a receiver. If it's like, if Ladd McConkey and Adonai Mitchell are still there, but there's also a host of defensive backs still available, I know who D'Amico, or I know who CJ's going to want, you know? I would imagine he wants one of those two guys, either McConkey or Adonai Mitchell or one of the other receivers that's still available, who are still out there. I think the team, me as a fan, I'd rather have him take a cornerback.
You would?
Yeah. For right here, right now, and what they need, and like where there's a position that is still wide open to competition. Sure, you got a couple former first-round picks opposite of Derek Stingley competing for defensive back, but that's not enough for me. I need upside and potential to boot and have an awesome competition there. Again, remember, you can never have too many good cornerbacks.
Sure.
You can really, as long as your wide receivers are healthy, you really don't need more than three. Three is an extreme luxury.
Well, and I think if I were a team that didn't have this is where CJ being so good kind of penalizes himself.
Yeah.
Because I think if I were a team that had a quarterback that needed the help, you know?
Yeah.
That needed the help, I'd be prioritizing Mitchell and McConkey. And honestly, if I'm at 42, I probably feel like I got to move up to get one of those guys because Buffalo's going to probably take one of them for sure.
Yeah.
So I got.
Unless Buffalo trades.
Unless
for
they trade out. Right,
you might get traded before 6 p.m.
Yeah. Either way, I think both those guys are going to be gone by 42, yeah. McConkey and Mitchell, and I think they are a cut above the other guys that are there. But I think some of the other guys that are there, especially in this scheme, might be very specific fits where you go, we'll take one of these guys at 86. You know, mm-hmm. Malachi Corley is there from Western Kentucky, or Tez Walker is there from Roman Wilson from Michigan.
Yeah.
And not even at 86. Like you can maneuver, as Nick has shown before.
Especially if you're looking for a guy with upside, somebody who's maybe very raw or what have you, or maybe they've had injury concerns. You're looking for upside and something that can develop over time. Because you're also...
Fact of the matter is, whoever this is wide receiver 4 on your team probably all season long.
Right.
But and provided also, health.
If they do, the one thing that we would know is if they take a wide receiver in the second round, then it definitely tells you something about how they feel about John Metchie.
Absolutely.
You know, like I think that's okay,
absolutely.
We got to find the next greatest thing, and we don't think it's Xavier Hutchinson or John Metchie.
Yep. Good stuff.
Which actually, so if they don't take a wide receiver in the second or third rounds, then I'm going to get excited about John Metchie. I'm going to believe everything that CJ's been saying about how awesome John Mechie looks.
I will too.
Yeah.
I will too.
At the very least, John Mechie knows where John Mechie has that Julian Edelman thing where he knows where his bread is buttered and he makes himself available. Like, I don't know where John Mechie may have been on vacation in freaking, I don't know, Alaska or something. And when he heard that CJ was working out, I don't know, he got himself
next
there.
Next plane there.
Yeah. Remember, that's Julian smart. Edelman went and rented a place where he found out that Brady was staying in the offseason.
Smart.
Before he even knew him or anything. Yeah.
Worked out pretty good.
Yeah.
Worked out pretty good. All right, let's, for those of you getting in your car, you know we got a nice long segment here. I've got my notes from last night's draft. So I want to just do a little stream of consciousness.
You said stream of conscience.
I said stream of conscience.
And I thought that was a telltale sign of your guilty conscience. You're going to get up here and confess everything.
Stream of conscience from last night's draft. Yeah. Consciousness. Stream of my brain from last night's draft. So I want to go through these here. Just a couple pre-draft.
Can I pass judgment on you?
Absolutely.
If it's your stream of conscience, I'm going to pass judgment, you dirty dog.
Get in line.
Yeah.
A couple pre-draft things before we get into the flow of the picks here. Detroit, the visual of that draft last night was amazing. I thought Detroit did and will continue these next 2 days to do an amazing job of hosting this thing, at least in terms of setting up a facility that pops.
According to the ABC broadcast, there were 275,000
people. I'm not
buying
that.
I don't know if I believe that either.
I feel like, you know what I feel like that is? You know how sometimes, like, on when something's streaming, like at any given time, there's 1,000 viewers, but then there's a total at the end where it's like, we had 15,000. I feel like it's that. I feel like they're probably packing in 80,000, but at any given time, one of 275,000 people kind of roam through.
Oh, okay.
Some stayed.
If they were,
some came early and left.
Theoretically, there were turnstiles that they would have gone
that's
in.
That's how many people walk through.
Right, because when they said 275,000, looking at the crowd, and I'm like, I just don't see that. That's three football stadiums. Like, yeah.
That's practically four NRG stadiums.
Standing up takes a lot less space than seats in a football stadium.
And it also sucks, so a lot of people probably left after standing up for a long time.
There probably were, at any given time, there were like 7,000 people in urinals, so you got to factor that in, too.
So I thought Detroit did a really good job.
Way better than Nashville, I'll tell you that much.
Way better than Nashville?
Way less crime, I'll guarantee you that.
It looked cool. The stage they had was badass.
That was, like, the fact that the LED lights changed to the color of the team drafting.
It was really cool.
That sounds like, I don't know, maybe you
very
and I
basic.
Are old. Maybe I we're boomers for, like, being impressed by that. We're like, look at that. They changed the colors.
How did they do that?
It was really cool.
So I thought Detroit did a great job. I was kind of rhetorically asking earlier, like, well, could we ever do that in Houston? Because we do big events really well. But that just aesthetically looked like an event we would have a hard time replicating. Someone sent in a great text, like, knock over the Astrodome. There's your space.
Yeah, or have it in the Astrodome.
You could do that.
And then everybody gets in there. You lock them in.
Yeah.
And then they have to clean up before
everybody gets their own feral cat.
Everybody gets their own feral
cat. It'd be great.
And an N95 mask for the dust.
Yeah.
The extreme dust.
That's right. The holy bleep moment before the draft, you and I have not talked about this yet. A.J. Brown got a contract extension from the Eagles, and it's significant for a couple of reasons. One,
this is a fever dream. You told me this last night.
He's now the highest paid receiver based on average annual value in the history of the sport. 3 years, $96 million, $84 million guaranteed, so $32 million a year. I think two things here, Seth. One, they have spent money on their receivers in Philadelphia this year.
Mm-hmm.
They paid DeVonta Smith a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
They've now paid A.J. Brown. They are paying a quarterback. I don't know what's getting sacrificed in all this for Philadelphia because something has to get sacrificed.
Well, think about what they've done.
They signed Saquon Barkley, too, this offseason.
They've drafted so many defensive dudes for their front seven and really their defensive line over the last few years that, they're loading up. They're fighting out everything they can. I think there are a lot of teams now that figure, all right, we need to be at a certain level for quarterback, but really – let's not overthink it and think we need to find the next Tom Brady. Let's just give, if we feel like we've got a good enough quarterback, load him up with weapons and keep him there as long as possible.
I think this, like the Eagles doing what they're doing with receiver, I think maybe the Bengals eventually come into the realization that they may need to do this with T. Higgins also. I think the Texans going and getting Stephon Diggs. I think that is the free agency veteran player roster construction version of what we saw last night. I don't know that last night with the draft, it being 23 offensive players and 9 defensive players, has as much to do with these guys are all just better players, these yeah. offensive guys. It's a down year for defensive guys than where the league is going, which when you look at the teams that are dangerous, that are making runs, that people are scared of, they're teams that are just ridiculously good offensively.
Right.
I think that's what it is. I think it's teams looking around and going, no, it's not that these defensive players are bad. Maybe it's not as good as other years. There's no Will Anderson in this draft. Like,
the edge rushers were very lackluster. It wasn't,
But 23 offensive versus 9 defensive is drastic. It's not just the talent level of the two sides of the ball.
And, like, let's not act like all of a sudden the quarterback talent is just that much better. It's that there are – the reason they set a record for – with 6 quarterbacks taken in the first 12 picks isn't because these quarterbacks are so awesome.
No.
It's because a lot of guys that would have been drafted in the 4th round 20 years ago are now getting picked in the top 12.
Desperation.
You know? Yeah.
Desperation.
Yeah, they're just desperate for it. And quarterback is just so overvalued.
Yeah.
They're honestly, I did have a moment last night where I was like, man, some of these other position players are, some of these guys are getting screwed out of being a top 10 pick just because a team is willing to take a guy that's got an 80% chance of sucking.
Yeah.
Like, it'll be a huge victory if 2 of those guys, those quarterbacks drafted last night, end up being good quarterbacks.
Yep.
They are just throwing picks away, trying to get something at quarterback.
2 is my total. Of those 6, if they get 2 that turn out to be franchise quarterbacks, I'll be mildly surprised. So going through the draft now, so the draft begins pretty much chalk through the first 4 picks, meaning it was kind of as people predicted. Ultimately, the 3 quarterbacks at the top and then Marvin Harrison Jr. at 4. Joe Alt goes at 5. I'm not going to hit every pick, just the significant
ones.
Joe
Alt's poor girlfriend looked petrified.
That's where you and I, because you and I watched the first half of the first round together. That's where you and I were like, okay. At first, we just see that it's a girl. And we're like, I wonder if that's his girlfriend or his sister.
We were playing a game of trying to figure out like whether, like, is that a girlfriend or a sister? There was the one player we kind of wished his sister was his girlfriend because she had like a tattoo on her leg and everything.
Oh, that was, oh God, who was that?
It wasn't Bo Nix, was
no,
it?
No, I'm going to go look.
It was a white guy.
Yeah, it was a white guy. It wasn't J.J. McCarthy either, I don't think. Anyways, well, I'll look it up. I'll find it. But yeah, Joe Alt's, I guess, girlfriend or sister, whoever it was.
It was his girlfriend because he hugged her first.
Okay.
And then went to the family and everything.
She had the Adam Gase
eyes.
If you're
going to hug a family member first, you hug mom first and then the sister. Yeah.
She had the Adam Gase eyes going. She had the deer in the headlights, man.
I know.
And she's being memed like crazy right now.
Yeah, I know. She's
cute.
Yeah, I know, but she looks petrified. Yeah. I think she's just really... she was dialed in.
Yeah.
She was focused. She's got to be like 6 foot tall. She might
be
a basketball.
Because he's 6'8".
He's 6'8 and a half.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. You said it best. You know, you're a Notre Dame fan or an alum, and you didn't realize he was that tall,
no.
Which is pretty good because usually there aren't a lot of 6'8 guys in the NFL. It's too unwieldy. It's like
not good.
Yeah. Like it's hard to move that body around fast enough. He doesn't move like he's 6'8 and a half.
Does not. Yeah. Does not. Malik Nabers goes 6th, and I think the reaction from Payne and Pendergast was, okay, this guy oozes New York City. He oozes swag, and he's going to murder Daniel Jones by week 5.
Yeah.
It's like, Malik Nabers.
We're looking at Malik Nabers like, all right, that's
except I'm playing with Jaden Daniels in college.
I'm like, man, that guy is a wide receiver.
Yes.
He's got his shades on, dark shades on inside.
All kinds of ice.
I couldn't even, I don't even know if I've seen jewelry, like some of the kinds of jewelry he was wearing and everything.
Yeah.
And he's going to New York City?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Who's your quarterback?
Yeah.
Daniel Jones.
Who was the last LSU wide receiver drafted in the first round that may have gotten uptight? Oh, yeah, it was Odell Beckham Jr. That's right.
He's the quarterback whose college coach bragged about him by saying, "Round here, no swag is swag."
Yeah, right.
That's why there's so many awesome Duke quarterbacks.
Yes. The 8th pick was Michael Penix Jr. This was the first holy bleep moment of the draft. Kirk Cousins reportedly, according to Diana Rossini, was stunned when he saw that the team he had just signed a 9-figure contract with. For him to play quarterback, drafted a quarterback. So dude hasn't even taken his first snap with the Falcons yet. They've already drafted his replacement, eventually with Michael Penix Jr. I'm going to read a text because I think that pick has been getting widely panned by people.
Right.
What are you doing? What are they doing in Atlanta? Text message 3323. Why are people tripping on Atlanta taking Penix? Cousins will win too many games for them to ever pick that high again to draft a top QB.
Right, which again, I'll go back to my objection to it earlier on is, man, you know what? I'll quote Stephon Diggs, noted Texans legend. Don't put the carriage before the horse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't be planning for how you're going to spend all this cash you've made when you're still haven't gotten a job yet. You know, like it would be the real world analogy. Mm-hmm. Just it's okay to dream a little bit, but when it comes to drafting somebody, when you just paid $90 million guaranteed in the first 2 years to a quarterback, like let's not worry about how we're going to extend this window that you haven't even started working on yet.
Yep.
I understand the thinking, but this is what happens when you go down, when you start playing the parlay game. It's Bill O'Brien type thinking. Like, well, all we have to do is these 17 things, and then we're going to have a dynasty that we need to sustain. So I'm going to draft Michael Penix right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yep. So I still think it's questionable. It's a fair point. I still think it's questionable. Continuing.
It's a fair point. You know what? The first step in being a GM who keeps the dynasty together is keeping your job long enough to get the dynasty
Right?
Yeah.
I was watching.
There's nothing worse for some people than master planning.
Yeah.
Because it's just too. It's the same way when you plot out a business venture on a spreadsheet. It's just too easy. It's too easy to just start going down the list and be like, oh, yeah, and then we'll do this, and then we'll do this. Oh, I'll have a profit margin of 30%. That's spectacular. Yeah.
Well, and I think if you're trying to feel good about the Texans and their direction and how they go about things, it doesn't take a lot to try these days. But if you're looking for more nuggets to feel good about the team, I think Nick Caserio is somebody who does not do what it is you're talking about. Yeah. I think he very much reacts to, he's proactive for sure. He's proactive in making the move with the Vikings and with Stephon Diggs. But he's definitely not somebody who's married to some sort of master plan.
Right.
Very adaptable.
Well, and then again, too, like the other thing about my issue with that text about like, well, you're not going to be able to pick high enough to draft a quarterback to sustain the success that you haven't even achieved yet.
Yeah.
But also that what's been demonstrated over and over again is that, yes, taking a quarterback high is one way to get a quarterback these days, but there's multiple other ways around 100%. The league, whether it's trading for a Matt Stafford or whomever else. There's so many ways to get a quarterback that don't handicap you in the present.
Yep.
So that's the issue with that.
Yep. Roma Dunze goes to Chicago, and you and I were watching this pick, and then I think it dawned on the two of us at the same time, like, oh, wow, Caleb Williams has DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, and Roma Dunze to throw to.
Roma Dunze. So that's how I like to say his name.
Yeah.
But then that also got us to thinking, my God, just Ryan Poles, who is being heralded by mostly Ryan Poles as just a genius.
Yeah.
Like, how much luck did it take? There's no way it was in his master plan that the Carolina Panthers were going to have the number one overall pick
be
theirs.
Yeah.
And that also then they'd get this quarterback who still hasn't proven himself in the NFL. And that was worth, like, in hindsight, they passed on C.J. Stroud. Like, they could have drafted C.J. Stroud. They didn't. This master plan all comes together. I guess they would just be going forward with Justin Fields.
That's for sure what they would be doing.
Yeah. So
Not the best plan either. I mean, Justin Fields hasn't been anything special.
Right.
You know?
Right. And even then, okay, in that scenario too, Bryce Young wouldn't have looked as bad as he did this year either. So it just, man, so much of it's just luck of the draw.
It is.
And like Ryan Poles is getting a lot of credit for his team sucking a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And for also the Panthers sucking this year, which I don't think they planned on.
Not that bad, at least. Not as bad as the Panthers did, but worked out for him, man.
Yeah, they could have. And they probably wouldn't have had enough capital to trade up to number one overall because Caleb Williams is slam dunk number one overall.
Yeah, they'd have been doing what everybody else is doing, making phone calls on Drake May all day.
Yeah.
So six QBs go in the top 12. We've talked about that. They showed the shot of all six of the headshots of the guys all next to each other on the screen, and that's where, looking at that screen, I'm like, wow, at least four of these guys are totally going to fail.
Based on your
J.J. McCarthy and Drake May, for sure.
You like to use the punchable face barometer. And J.J. McCarthy, man, I'll tell you one thing. Dude. Guys with punchable faces are made 10 times more punchable with that stupid haircut that the kids have these days. This mop top haircut where you look like a racer head, it's not a good look for people who already have a punchable face.
We've had quite the run of punchable faces in the first round. of the draft at quarterback the last few years.
J.J. McCarthy's his face looks like it should be on my body. You know, like I was looking at myself in the mirror, and I'm like, I guess I kind of have a punchable face, except it fits better on my body.
Stop it! You don't have a punchable face. Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, Will Levis.
Drake May, who would be played by like a young Jason Bateman as the country club member who scoffs at the help.
Yes.
I'm looking at Drake May, and I'm pretending I'm the scholarship kid at his fancy private school, and he's totally making fun of me as I'm serving him and his friends breakfast, like meals in the cafeteria.
I'm going backwards chronologically. Will Levis, I'm counting as a first-round pick because I think his punchable face is what dropped him to the second round.
Eminently punchable
face. Eminently punchable. Where's Kenny Pickett on the punchable face scale?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think I've ever identified him as a punchable face.
I haven't either. I'm just going through all the first rounders here.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, Kenny Pickett doesn't have a punchable face.
Okay.
He actually has, I'd like to go to a concert with him.
You would?
Yeah.
Okay. Mac Jones and Zach Wilson, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where I feel like Drake May, I feel like they doubled down on tennis brats by, Mac Jones was a guy that throws hissy fits.
Yeah.
Cries to an extreme degree and screams in agony when he's injured.
Yes.
Like all these red flags. And they're like, let's get another one of them there. I like crazy. That.
Yep.
I like these guys who are nothing like the Patriots way is supposed to be.
Right.
Give me the opposite of Tom Brady. Give me the wimpiest dude, like the biggest brat you can find. Yeah.
Brock Bowers goes off the board at 13, which was interesting because they drafted a tight end, Michael Mayer, last year. The Raiders
got to make
did.
It these days, Sean.
The Raiders.
Two tight ends. Yep.
They're going for the Gronk.
Two tight ends and a microphone.
Gronk Aaron Hernandez approach minus the murdering is what I call that. Defense finally goes off the board.
So far.
In 15.
If there's time.
At 15.
They are Raiders now.
That is true.
Fair
point. 15, 16, 17, all defense. So you get a few defensive players there. We made it to 23, at which point I said to myself, all right. I looked at the board and I said, I'm officially cool with the Texans trade back to number 42. I know Terrion Arnold went at 24, and people like him.
I'm watching the ABC broadcast as Saban is
gushing you up
about Terrion Arnold and how – and it wasn't – no, I'm going to tell you. It didn't look like he was trying hard to put – it's not like he needs to, make the case that Alabama puts out good football players or anything.
That's
I think
fair.
That's pretty much assumed.
Yeah.
He was talking about Terrion Arnold, and it sounded like he was describing either Will Anderson or D'Amico Ryans himself.
Just their mentality.
Yeah. Who never – to be clear, D'Amico didn't play for Nick. But, as far as a kid from Alabama who Miss Terry's favorite player on the team was Terrion Arnold.
Yeah, that's
Terrion Arnold sits next. He sits next to Saban, but it doesn't sound like he's a kiss ass type.
Okay.
It sounds like he's one of these guys that's just so full of energy and enthusiasm, kind of like a Will Anderson, a George Springer, a Pat Beverly to a certain degree.
Okay.
You know, I know this about Pat. Brandy was doing rehab on a surgery. Mm-hmm. At the same place that the Rockets do theirs.
Yeah.
And Pat Beverly was in there a lot of time. This is when Pat Beverly was still kind of he was just a kid from Russia that nobody really knew that much about, but he played his ass off and Russell Westbrook hated him. She said he couldn't have been a nicer kid.
I've heard that about
him. Just talking to all the old people in the place and everything.
Yeah.
Asking them their opinion about sports.
That's
and everything.
Very Will Anderson like.
Not just to Brandy herself. Barry Warner was in there at the time too doing rehab. Now, Barry, listen, I trusted Pat Beverly with my wife. Barry?
No chance.
That dude's too much of a flirt. I'm going to call him after the show.
Retroactively getting angry about it.
Not being available.
If you're listening, Barry.
Hey, Barry. Barry, strutting around with no shirt on at rehab back in the day.
No, I'll find him. I'll bring him to the draft party tonight.
Okay.
So you can take him down face to face.
Fight him.
Yeah. All right, a few more things here. Stream of consciousness. It's really hard for me.
You're really smart.
Yeah. No, I can't.
When it comes to this.
It's weird.
Dullardville.
Yeah. Big time. Big time. So a few more things, just observations from the draft last night. Tony Khan, the son of Shad Khan, the Jacksonville owner.
Son of Khan.
Son of Khan. It's the 19th Star Trek film based out of Jacksonville. So Tony Khan is the son of Jacksonville owner Shad Khan. Tony Khan owns All Elite Wrestling, which is it's probably the closest thing to WWE that you can find out there. It's not in WWE's universe, but it's on TNT every Wednesday. It's a big wrestling organization. He owns it, and he this week was on air playing his owner character on air, and one of the wrestlers on the show gave him a pile driver. As a show of sticking it to the boss. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like a pile driver is where you hold a guy upside down and you bring him and he lands on his head.
Yeah. It's a tough thing to pull off.
Tough thing to pull off.
As anybody our age can tell you when their older brothers would do it. It's hard to pull off safely.
Yeah. Yeah. So Tony Khan sold it on the broadcast. They had to stretcher him out. Credit Tony Khan, man. He respects a good wrestling storyline. He's not going to give up the wrestling, you know, they call it kayfabe. He's not going to give up the secrets of the industry. He wore a neck brace in the war room for the Jacksonville Jaguars last night. Now, he was smiling a little too much for somebody wearing a neck brace, I would say.
That guy got in an accident with a couple months ago, is wearing a neck brace and smiling all the way to the bank is so far
Maybe
right
Tony
now.
Tony Khan's going to sue this wrestler that gave him a pile driver. But so, anyways, as a wrestling fan, I respected it.
What was the name of the wrestling organization in Texas back when the Von Erich brothers were?
That was World Class Championship Wrestling.
So that was regional, right?
Yeah, that was Dallas.
It was just Dallas in that
Dallas
area?
Dallas and the surrounding area, yeah.
Are there any like that, like successful regional ones
that are still
right
around?
Now? Yeah.
No, most of them, the ones that are around are tied to WWE. Yeah. You know, they're like developmental territories for WWE. So, yeah,
maybe
that's...
Maybe you and I could start our own...
Our own wrestling territory?
Our own wrestling territory in Houston. Why? No. I'm not... Well, I can exploit people underpay them and screw them over and all that stuff. What? What?
That's all I'm about.
You can do that,
and I get to write the storylines.
I've got three spreadsheets. I'll show you how easy it is. I've got it all set up, Sean. It's simple.
Ben, put it in the big book of ideas. All right, a couple more things here real quick. Xavier Worthy to the Chiefs. Chiefs trade up
son
from
of a,
32.
Son of a, I forgot all about that.
32. Stop. Chiefs trade up from 32 to 28 with the Bills. Thanks a lot, Bills. Sign the rest of the AFC.
Just
the hell.
Hold over like, oh.
Oh, here's the fastest guy.
It's like I'm in a sculpting competition with Michelangelo. Right. And he's sitting there with no clay. And I'm like, ha ha, I got all the material. And then all of a sudden somebody comes in.
Brandon
like,
Bean.
Here you go, Michelangelo.
Hey, Michelangelo, you need some clay? Here you go. Brandon Bean. Clown.
Brandon Bean.
Jerk.
Just a stupid clay peddler.
But
they, if the Bills trade for Brandon Ayuk today, I think I saw Clint Sterner. Like, right, at, I think, I want to say, oh, no, somebody else didn't. Never mind, Clint. I take back the credit.
No. Clint tweeted about the Bills spoon-feeding receivers to teams.
Yeah.
He was mad about that. Yeah, like, he's...
Now, so the way they can come back from that is if they do trade for Brandon Ayuk or something.
With the 33rd pick and some more stuff. Yeah.
So the Bills loaded up on capital, and now they can work the phones for 18 hours.
Bills traded back twice. Yeah. So they traded back. They allowed Xavier Worthy to go to the Chiefs. Ricky Pearsall then goes to the Niners at 31.
Yeah.
And then they actually originally traded back to 32, the Bills. And then this goes to our last observation here. They move back one spot to 33. They let the Panthers move up to 32 to draft our guy, Xavier Leggett, master of the deep ball.
Mm-hmm.
John Crumpler, who covers the Texans for Texans Wire, I believe.
USA Today's Texans Wire. Yeah, right.
He had Xavier Leggett on his podcast. We played some of that earlier this week.
It blew up. Like, he was asked about,
he had Xavier Leggett as a guest.
And we had missed this, but Xavier Leggett had basically just said that the Panthers.
Well, take a listen.
Oh,
we got it right here. Yeah. Here's John Crumpler.
That explains what it says in the show rundown.
Yeah. Here's John Crumpler with Xavier Leggett. Xavier Leggett calling his shot a few days ago.
Potentially would be the Carolina Panthers, and my understanding is that's a team that has shown a lot of interest in you, whether that was the top 30 visit or coming to your pro day. What have your interactions been like with the Carolina Panthers?
I had to meet with the Panthers about four or five times. I mean, the relationship, it just keep continuing to grow. And they really hoping that I can make it to that second round. And they keep on telling me, man, that if I'm sitting at 33, they're going to take me.
They did even one better. He was still sitting there at 32, and they traded up to go get him.
Was he in the green room? He was, wasn't he?
He was not.
He wasn't? Okay.
He was not in the green room.
If he was, he'd be sitting there next to Forrest Gump.
I know.
Me and my bestest
shrimp
bud.
Shrimp stew, shrimp burger, shrimp scampi.
That accent is just so awesome.
I love it.
Yeah, they ended up being asked about that. Canales was asked about it. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people. I heard Landry and Lopez talking about this in the way that it was coming off, I didn't hear the entire conversation, but it seemed like from the way Landry and Lopez were talking about it, and maybe some other people, that they felt like the Panthers maybe had done Xavier Leggett dirty by teasing him with the notion that they were definitely going to draft him. But they drafted him.
They drafted him. Yeah. They kept their word. They more than kept their word. They moved up to get him.
I wonder. I don't think that they probably were stoked about him being so
open
about what they had told him and everything. Like the team wants to try to keep their cards close to the vest, which is that's why I do like the way the Texans operated last year with CJ Stroud. CJ thought the Texans hated him. Like CJ, they just do not. Anything you hear about the Texans pre-draft, I feel like, man, you got to take it with 17 grains of salt because. We dealt with this last year. The first time we saw a draft with Caserio and D'Amico, people just started making crap up.
Yeah.
You know?
Because they just
didn't get anything. Yeah. And I think, I don't know, maybe that started to happen a little bit yesterday with some of the reports about the Texans, you know, trying to trade
up into the first
round. Figgy. I think Figgy said it best that Nick was looking for a sucker.
He's sucker searching.
He's like, he's always going to be looking. He's on the prowl. It's not like, I think it was being painted like he was desperate to get back up into the first round.
Right. All right, top of the hour, we'll do our 8 at 8. We got a lot of stuff still to get into from the draft. Okay, so day two for the Texans. As of right now, we'll start with pick 42. Maybe. Does Nick Caserio use some of that day three draft capital to move around like in previous years? Or I actually have a John Harris theory on this from when I talked on my podcast with him about why the Texans may not be as hepped up to move some of this day three draft capital. We'll have that coming up for you next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so how does Nick Caserio play the game tonight? Reports were, I don't even know if these count as reports. Like, it doesn't shock me at all that Nick Caserio would be making phone calls about the back end of the first round. I would be curious, like, what specific players that they were looking at maybe that might have gone off the board. Like, there were so, I would have to think it would be defense, and there were so few defensive players taken overall. That have got to feel like 90% of the guys, they feel like, hey, we might need to move up to get this guy. They might still be there heading into day two of the draft.
Right.
So one of the theories out there, Seth, has been that because of NIL, name, image, likeness, for those who don't know what that is, guys being able to get paid in college, because of the fact that guys can make a decent amount of money doing commercials or just getting paid to play college football is really what it amounts to, that more guys are going to stay in school and try to improve their draft stock, maybe make a couple $100,000 from NIL. Like,
if you're going to make $200,000 in NIL, that's guaranteed money for the most part. Whereas if you go into the draft or if you go as an undrafted rookie free agent, then you got to make the team, then you got to stay on the team because your contract's not guaranteed when you're a rookie for the entire season.
Yep.
There's just a lot that's left up in the air. So a lot of these guys now are opting to stay in. It's the fewest underclassmen in a long, long time.
Long time,
staying in the draft. So it creates, for at least this year and maybe next year, a little bit of a gap where some of these guys that would be in the draft this year aren't there. So you get into the later rounds. And for at least a year or two until they catch up and these guys start graduating out, there might be a little bit of a weakness there.
There's a perceived dip in talent in the middle of day three that hasn't been there the last few years. And just to quantify it, at its peak, underclassmen coming out was like 130 or 120, something like that. This year it's 58.
Wow.
So it's a big drop off. Now I look at that and I go, okay, well then Nick Caserio, who already loves to move day three picks to kind of move up and down with the day two picks, you know, like, oh, I'll give you a couple fourths to go get Nico Collins. Here's a fifth and a sixth so I can move up four spots and get Tank Dell. Five of the seven guys that Nick Caserio has drafted on day two of the draft over his three drafts have been trade-ups where he's used picks during day three and in future years to go do that. So my initial thought is, well, he's going to be even more inclined to do that this year because, in theory, you're not getting as good a player as you're used to getting in the fifth, sixth, and seventh round. I floated that theory to John Harris on the Utopia podcast this week, and Johnny brought up a really good counterpoint to this. And when he brought this counterpoint up, I said, okay, well, this may feel like now the Texans might hang on to some of those picks. Johnny said, and keep in mind, John Harris watches all of these guys.
Right.
When we're sitting here, John Harris is not talking in generalities about fifth, sixth, and seventh round guys. When he's giving his theories, he's watched all these guys play. So what Johnny said was, yeah, you may not have in rounds, say, 5, 6, and 7, the guys with the same ceiling that you've had in previous years, because in previous years it'd theoretically be younger guys who aren't as seasoned. But there's, it's all guys now who have had 4, 5, some even 6 years of experience.
A lot of maturity and maybe more NFL ready.
More NFL ready, more mature, maybe not the high ceiling, but ready to come in and be a pro right away. Which, and then my counter, not counter, but my response to that with Johnny was like, okay, well, now I feel like the Texans are closer. while they do have needs, I don't think rounds 5, 6, and 7 are where you're going. We're going to fill needs with this. I do think that maybe they're more inclined to hold on to these guys because these could be the finishing touches that you're putting or your special teams guys. And instead of having to pay Neville Hewitt $4 million to be a special teamer, and I know he's on the team, but I don't think much of his deal is guaranteed, you can pay XYZ sixth rounder $750,000 to be your special teamer.
I guess the other
side, maybe they're more inclined to use those picks.
Another part of that also might be that because it's easier to get – it's easier to talk yourself into the upside of some guy who's coming out as a redshirt sophomore, had one good season, and he tested really well. So you got kind of fixated on, wow, look at all this upside. It might actually be good for some GMs to get more of a dose of reality and realize like, oh yeah, wow, yeah, I remember 2 years ago I thought this guy was really going to be awesome, but now, after those next 2 years, you realize, so maybe guys make fewer – I guess maybe I don't want to say risky because it's all late round picks. It's not that risky, but maybe they go more for solid proven ability more so than upside.
That may be what's there.
Yeah,
you know, they may be forced to do that. So
I also though, but I do wonder though too, because given the way Nick looks at like at this, like he's an arbitrage trader or something. I think NFL GMs being what they are, they tend to devalue future picks. So there's money to be made by trading for next year's picks.
Yeah.
Teams get really convinced that their opinion is superior right now, and they want what they want right now. And if you can take advantage of that, like Chris Ballard is really good about trading back, trading into future years, doing stuff where you're being the smarter, savvier, more like computer-like dude. I could see Nick starting to do that as this day starts to wear on, trading for future picks.
Oh, yes. Somebody pointed out, God, what am I thinking? You asked me, are there any like little regional wrestling promotions? That's right. Booker T has his Reality of Wrestling here in Houston. So he's got Booker
that's has Reality of Wrestling. Yeah, no, I was just listening. Okay. Yep,
Booker has one. Yeah, right here in Houston. My bad, Booker, if you're listening. I was thinking more like
you better watch it, sucka.
It's right underneath my own nose. I know.
Yeah.
Can you dig it?
What was his signature move?
The Booker T signature. He did like a spinning kick on the back of somebody's head. His big signature move, though, was after the match. He would break dance and call it the spin-a-rooney.
Oh, that's right.
He would spin and come up and do the five thing. Yeah, Booker's the best. Xavier Worthy to Kansas is a text message. Xavier Worthy to Kansas City was the second biggest lock in the draft behind Caleb Williams to the Bears. I do feel like he was mocked to Kansas City quite a bit, but not to where they had to trade up to get him. Just he was falling.
It was
to
one of those.
32.
It was almost like the Ravens. Sometimes you can just tell. Remember, like I tweeted that about Kyle Hamilton like 2 months before the draft. Sometimes it just makes too much sense. Like everything about it, the other teams aren't going to value these things or be able to exploit them the same way either the Ravens or Andy Reid would. Those two, they've just got a type. And Pittsburgh used to be that way, but they've lost their way a little bit. They don't have the same necessarily identity that they used to.
Little bit.
I mean, now boy. And now, if you can add some kind of domestic assault to it, boy, then Kansas City is all over
there. They're all over.
They're like, oh, yeah, give me that.
Move way up the board.
Classy organization.
Move way up the board.
Classy organization.
Nate Wiggins was Baltimore's pick yesterday. Wiggins was a guy who was forecasted like around 18 to 20.
Yeah.
And then there he is at 30. That's their need.
You know, the other thing about the draft that sometimes I get annoyed is when a team takes somebody and people say, well, oh, you could have had that guy. You could have had that guy in the next round. But, like, those same people typically won't do the same when, like, Johnny Newton falls. Like, if Johnny Newton had been taken 20th overall, nobody would have batted an eyelash. Maybe some people wouldn't have liked it or whatever. But nobody would have said, you could have had him on day two. And yet, here we sit with Johnny Newton available on day two.
Yep.
It's you just never know what other teams' draft boards are.
You don't.
I don't think Johnny Newton... I'll be surprised if the Texans stand pat at 42, I'll be surprised if Johnny Newton is available then.
I would be too.
Yeah.
I would be too. There's a few guys. We'll go through our best available. We've got 2 hours still here, so we got plenty of stuff still to dig into on the draft. Night 2 tonight. You can hear it right here on Sports Radio 610. Seth will be on with John Harris and with Mark Vandermeer starting at 6 p.m. tonight. We've got you covered all day long on the NFL draft. All right, up next, the 8 at 8, the Ocho, 8 stories, including the NFL draft. We've got the Astros. Dusty Baker gets a little hardware. Oh, Big Dust. We've got that and several more stories.
Big Dust.
That's what they called Dusty Rhodes back in the day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So Big
What
Dust.
Was his signature move?
The bionic elbow.
What was that like? Can you do
he
it?
He just
right
spin
now?
His arms and then hit somebody on the head with the elbow.
He'd spin his arms
he'd
like
spin
this?
His ass and go
like he's in a Broadway
elbow.
Show?
Yeah.
And then
he'd
bah!
And then bah with the elbow.
I got to come up with a Pope Zaza signature
yeah,
move.
We'll think of something.
Okay.
Text in. All right. The 8 at 8 coming up next. Stay there.